Good morning, afternoon, evening from all of us at Game Week Navigators. Today, I'm joined by a dear friend from FPL USA, FPL underscore Kante, also known as Aoi. Thanks for coming on as we discuss our Game Week 1 findings and learnings. How was the Game Week for you, Aoi?
It went okay. Could have been better. I made some last moment changes that didn't quite work out well. Especially regarding X minutes, I was thinking that Pedro's X minutes may not be as good, or Martinelli's. Both of them returned, and I got in Odegaard and Jackson instead. So that didn't quite play out well. But I think in general, in average, it went okay. It's only game week one, and I think I'm still happy with my choices that I made for the game week one draft. Looking forward to game week two.
Absolutely. I mean, at least you're ahead of the curve with at least the Jackson move already made, which a lot of people are going to jump off Watkins to Jackson, even though like Watkins did look good, but Jackson fixtures are really good coming up. So yeah, I mean, decent game week for you as well. It was a okay-ish game week for me. I ended up maybe around 80-ish points. All of my assets except my midfielders returned. Foden, Bruno and Rashford, these were the three that did not, and Pickford. I mean, he felt like such a good thing, but then kind of trap as usual, as expected from him. Yeah, let's just run over the results for this game week. So we had Manchester City, Burnley, City 1-3-0 over there, Arsenal 2-1 at Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth 1-1. With West Ham, Brighton 4-1 at Luton, Everton 0-1 Fulham, Sheffield 1-0 to Crystal Palace, winning that game. Newcastle game was the exciting one, 5-1 to Aston Villa. Then Brentford and Spurs ended up at a 2-2 level draw. And as usual, Chelsea and Liverpool could not muster
another draw.
last five from what I recall, including cup games.
At least there were goals this time, right? There were like the three or four like nil-nils.
Absolutely. I remember that cup game, I think it was the EFL Cup final, in which we went 0-0, and then even the penalties were like till the last penalty, it was like even. So we won that on penalty at like 10-11 or something. Kepa missed his penalty, and I guess Kelleher got his.
So it's just that kind of game.
I mean, fighting off the field and on the field, we're still the same. And then the last game that we had today, Manchester United and Wolves, United pulled off something at the end, 1-0 to them. So let's just deep dive into who were the overachievers for us in this game week. So the overachievers on XG were Isaac, Haaland, and Emerson Royal. What do you think about Haaland? Like, 6 minutes into the season, finds the net.
Yeah, he always does that, right? I mean, he's just... I think in the game, he had like 10 or 15 touches or something like that. But he just finds the right places in the right places and gets the right touches and so on, right? And he was, after the game, he was asked like how he finds those spaces, right, all the time, and he said that I don't know, it's just natural, it comes natural to me, right? So he is that kind of player. He just knows where to be at the right time. But yeah, both his goals were very well taken. In general, Man City, probably I will talk about it more, of course, in general, they didn't look as like prolific as we want them to be or as we expect them to be. But yeah, Haaland is just Haaland, monster.
Absolutely. I mean, from what you were saying, I remember when he scored his second goal, he just had 9 touches, 3 shots on the goal, 2 in the goal. So that's just crazy numbers. Ended up with a delta of 1.43 on his XG. Both of his shots were like just 0.5 XG total. So that's the nature of Haaland. Then Isaac as well, like just an XG of 0.77, got 2 goals from that, about a delta of 1.23. So just looked in the right places at the right time and was on it. So we will discuss that in like detail when we go on to the Villa game, as well as Emerson Royal. One shot on target, 0.03 XG, gets a goal, a delta of 0.97. So for sure, the major out of the box overachiever over here, Emerson Royal. We do not expect to see him scoring these many goals and converting 0.03 XG chances. So one to avoid, one not to fall in the trap for.
Yep.
So let's just move to the underachievers. Neil Maupay, a big underachiever, had about 1.35 XG, scored nothing out of it. Cash as well was at 0.72 XG. Would have been a fantasy assist for Watkins if he would have just converted an open chance empty goal. It was bad finishing and just not in the right mind, I guess. Just missed the open goal, open shot. As well as Jackson. I mean, this one does not concern me at all. This was, there were only positives about from what I saw about Jackson. You being a Chelsea fan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely doing all the right things throughout the game, running the channels, making the defenders think and work hard. That's what you want from your number nine, right? And his chances, I think he had like two big chances, four chances in general, like four decent chances. None of them were like super duper, like big misses or anything. But he racked up the XGs. And it's only good signs, as you said. It's only good, better things that I expect from him in general moving forward. So yeah, looking forward to it. I mean, again, there were, of course, big disappointment with missing out on Nkunku with his injury preseason. If he was in there, I mean, both of them would have been great APL assets. Nkunku not being there makes Jackson probably slightly less of an APL asset. But again, we saw that against Liverpool. It's probably hard to judge against this Liverpool defense or midfield in general as well. But again, I mean, just from an outside viewpoint, he looks good. He looks very, very good. Absolutely.
I mean, if it wasn't down to Alisson making those saves, another keeper might have just let it through. Alisson just being himself and being that big major XGC saver for us over the past few seasons, he was the only one who could keep him out. Another day, he would have like scored two goals at least. Okay, let's just jump on to our major talking points. Manchester United and Wolves game just ended. Manchester United caught about 1.46 XG. And Wolves had a 2.23 XG. And the final scoreline was absolutely the opposite. 1-0 to United. What do you think about this game? Any positives for Wolves or any bad things that happened on the United side?
Yeah, I mean, Wolves look really, really good. And especially given that they have had only a couple of days under the new manager. He already seems to have kind of found a way to make the players work hard. They were working very, very hard. They looked devastated by the end of the game, right? They were all very, very tired. But they put in a shift, all of them, right? Even like the likes of Semedo, Lemina. They looked really, really good in general. Kunha, right? He didn't score any goals. They're just missing that kind of finishing touch, right? Which has been a problem for them over the last couple of seasons as well, since Heman has lost his touch since his injury and everything. But yeah, I mean, if they have a better finisher, and I hope that one of Fabio Silva, Kunha, or even the likes of Neto, etc., Sarabia, they have players, like they have good ballers. It's just that they cannot find the back of the net somehow. They look like the better team for the better part of the game as well. Right? It's just unlucky that they didn't score.
100%. Like till the first 30 minutes, they were like completely bossing the game. 30 to 40 minutes in that 10-minute range was the only time when I saw Manchester United actually show a fight. And then post that again till the 80th minute, it was again all Wolves till the Varane... I would say it wasn't very very clinical. It was more of a very lucky goal. It bounced off well. Came to Bisaka. Bisaka put a good, decent ball in. Varane at the right place and the right time. But were completely bossed out of the game. Midfield especially. Lamina single-handedly was handling all of them together. And they were forcing them to move on to the wings. United could not run any channels. And on the wings, one side, Garnacho was literally bullied entire game by Semedo, almost pocketing him. And a little worrying signs from Manchester United side. We expect a little better from them. But still, just the first game of the season, got the result. But gameplay-wise, they were not the best. Onana as well at the end, the penalty shot was very close. Some VAR officials could give it, some don't. So, you know, they were lucky today and they were lucky to come off with a win, but not the best performance. We expect much, much better from Bruno and Rashford at least. Rashford completely out of position, not most reactive in its center forward position, clearly looked out of water. His best position for sure is that left winger where he was not operating today. Garnacho was losing a lot of balls, a lot of pressure was invited onto themselves. And from a Wolves point of view, beautiful play from Cunha and almost single-handedly won the game for them. Only if he had the shooting boots on, different result today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a little disappointed with how Rashford looked like, especially. I mean, of course, not his favorite position. But he just kind of looked a little off speed as well, right? I don't know if it's fitness or something underlying or whatever. Just didn't look like the Rashford that we all know, right? And Bruno also had a lot of missed passes. I mean, he was in general okay, but yeah, again, not the FPL asset that you want to see for 8.59 million-ish midfielder. They looked better after Eriksson came in because again Mount had a very, very poor game. I mean, he was almost invisible, right? He barely did anything. They did look better after Eriksson came in and Garnacho went off. Sancho came in as kind of the false nine. Not false nine, he was actually still playing left wing. Rashford was still going through the middle. But they looked a better side for the last 20-25 minutes-ish. I'm surprised that Ten Hag didn't make the changes earlier, at least a few minutes earlier. So that was surprising. But yeah, it's just a Man U thing, right? They get these wins somehow, last moment goals and so on. We have seen this for years and years. It's just Man U thing.
Yeah, just a little more expected from them. So personally, we'll still stick with their assets for now, for sure. You can't like knee-jerk them out of your team, but one to watch out for the future to see how they are progressing and if the lack of a number nine is still affecting them. So let's move on to our personal game. Chelsea was Liverpool. So ended again on a 1-1, as usual, a draw. But a well-deserved draw, I feel, from both the sides. At least from Liverpool side, I would say we got a little lucky. We should have almost lost this game. But then again, there were offside goals on both sides. So at the end of the day, ended up on a stalemate. But Chelsea XG was like 1.35, Liverpool 1.28. Fairly matched as per the XG matchup goes by. But Chilwell, what a game. Yeah, almost played winger and was bossing that left-hand side. So his left and our right-hand side. And kept Trent in... like on the right back position, could not move into the box midfield at all because of Chilwell's threat, as well as on the right, Sterling was having a good game against Robertson, completely bossed him out of the game, was inviting a lot of pressure because of all the attacks that were coming from the wings, and Enzo Fernandez had one of his best games I've seen in a Chelsea jersey. Literally ran the entire midfield for Chelsea. Liverpool clearly lacking that DM and not looking likely that we are going to sign anyone as of now So yeah, a few weeks at least, Liverpool is going to have the same problems, that the defense is going to be fairly wide open and a lot of chances expected against us.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, for Chilwell, if there is outside Haaland, if there is anyone essential right now in the game, in FPL, it's probably Chilwell, just because of the positions that he's taking. He was bombing through the left. He was also sometimes inverting into the midfield. For his assist, he was actually very central, right? It was a header into this assist. So he was all over the field, right? And he looked very good. Reece James also looked very, very good, right? I mean, they were the two outlets for all of our attacks from coming from the wings. Of course, as you said, Sterling also had a very, very decent game. The XG doesn't necessarily tell it, but I think Chelsea were the better side, at least just from a gameplay standpoint in this particular game. Liverpool looked good in some part of the game. They have the individuals, right? That's what Liverpool's strength is, the Salahs and the Jotas who can find goals out of nothing. So that's there, of course. But yeah, I think in general, I would say Chelsea were slightly ahead from a matchup standpoint. There are good signs, and of course, and we'll get Caicedo and Lavia, hopefully. So that's bad news for Liverpool, good news for Chelsea. But yeah, I think I was speaking about that before the season started as well, that I think Chilwell, Jackson and Reece are the three best FPL assets to own from Chelsea.
For sure.
And they were kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that Chilwell and Reece were essentially the two attackers, right, alongside Jackson. Absolutely. For a lot of time. So you are essentially getting a 5.5 million attacker from Chelsea if you buy Chelsea and Reece. But yeah, and the fixtures are fantastic from Gaming 2 onwards.
Absolutely. I mean, the Reece James substitution was like called upon by a lot of people, but doesn't seem like an injury, just like tired because did not have a lot of preseason minutes
in him. Like, yeah.
So completely okay on that front. From a Liverpool standpoint, like I would say Salah looked really good, but then again, just that offside, just a bit offside, and then 70 minutes he was taken off, had a angry bust up reaction to it, but then Klopp later clarified that it was nothing and he has no issues with him, so looks good to start again. So it was like surprisingly looked really good in the first 30 minutes, that we were actually bossing the game for the first 30 minutes, and then we were all on the back foot for the rest of the game. But whenever we had possession, so obviously it looked good. Was taking a few corners off Robertson as well. So Robertson was disappointing, to be honest, in this game. We need to find a replacement for him long term if Liverpool have like title ambitions, because it's getting very leaky in this system. And even in the 4-3-3 system, he's not performing to his best potential. He's bombing too far ahead, leaving in a lot of spaces. We do not have any DM or anyone who can cover spaces anymore. Van Dijk has lost his pace ever since the ACL injury. So creates a big opening for us. So not very positive signs from the Liverpool side, but still 1-1 and we still did not lose. So that's a positive that came out of the game. Did not look the best, to be honest.
Yep, true.
Let's move on to our next matchup. That was the Brentford and Spurs. Madison had a great game. Everything was running through him. And but on the other side, Thomas Frank actually had a proper coaching masterclass. Negated it completely by setting up in a 5-2-3 kind of system. And basically negated all the wing play that was possible from Spurs end, and kept Son out of the game. But Matt is like complete talisman role. He could have had his third assist, although the second assist was a very lucky assist. Got tackled, ball went into the direction of Emerson Royal. Royal scores a worldie out of a goal. But he should have had a assist to Richarlison, which was kind of sitter, which he missed. But then again, on the other side as well, Brentford missed a lot of big chances, as they always deal in only big chances. But they missed a lot of open goals, like one from Mbeumo that should have been converted. And all the Mbeumo owners would have come really happy out of this game in general as well. Because he got the goal, he was looking very lively. And if you even look at his average position, he looks very all over the place as well as more very attacking, very forward. The one on the left is his mark. And that is the 19 number that he's carrying. Most attacking player for Brentford. So looking like a very good pick at 6.5, taking penalties, almost the talisman of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, their fixtures are also very, very good going from game week two. This was probably one of their tougher early fixtures, right? From game week, I think game week two is Fulham, if I'm not wrong. Their fixtures look really, really good. So yeah, at 6.5, you cannot get anything better, right? Penalty taker, looks like the talisman. So yeah, absolutely. Great asset to own.
I mean, people were actually making fun of him not missing the goal completely and not hitting the sidebar or the post. But then should have scored that, to be honest. But it happened.
He's very involved, right? That's what you want for FPL, right? Okay, he misses one or two chances here and there. But you want the involvement. You want those players who are always in the game, right? He just is that kind of player. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's just move on to the next game. Sheffield United and Crystal Palace. A very dismal game from Sheffield's point of view. They do not have any attackers as such. They played William Osula, who has literally featured for them two times in the championship. And they lost their main attacker in NDA and their main creative force in Sander Berge. And it looking really like a fish out of water. I don't know where they're going to get their goals from. So anyone playing Sheffield United can actually have a defense playing against Sheffield United and basically get clean sheets out of it. Very small chances created. One from Osula itself was a curling ball, almost ended up in the net, but then did not look very convincing. Also, as per the average position map, you can see they were in a very low block defense kind of situation on the left and were trying to sit back and manage through the game. But Crystal Palace attack was too potent for them. Eze, especially, what a game for him. Created seven fantastic big chances, had six shots on the goal, putting in crosses from all sides, had about 0.51 XG and 0.41 XA. So a total of 0.92 XI, which is really good when it comes down to per 90 stats. Six block shots, that was the one which really pushed me towards deep diving into his stats. He's taking all of these shots which were not expected out of him. He was supposed to be more of a creator. But in season as well, we've seen he's bombing forward and trying to be the talisman of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, with Zaha leaving, someone has to take the burden of scoring those goals as well, right? And it looks clearly that Eze has the license to shoot, right? So Roy Hodgson has given him the license, just go there and take your chances. And he has the capability to convert some of those chances from even long range as well, right? We have seen that in the past. And again, at 6.5, you are getting the talisman of the team, very, very likely on penalties as well. Absolutely. Another great asset, 6.5 million, no doubt. And I think for Sheffield, they are probably the most targetable fixture this season alongside Luton. I don't see any hope for them unless they drastically change something by some players. Of course, their attackers would be back. But even so, I mean, it's going to be a very, very difficult season for them. And as you said, they lost Sander Berge as well. He was kind of the heart of their midfield. I don't know why they even let that happen. And also selling to potential rival, right? So it's going to be a very, very tough season for them.
Yeah, they have a ownership problem, to be honest. Last season as well, they went through almost dissolving the club, almost went into administration. So that was the reason where all their assets had to be sold or reduced pay, like wages needed to be done. So that has really affected them. And they're one of these teams that have come up and not upgraded. They have actually degraded their squad. So it doesn't look very good going into it. In addition to Eze, I also liked Edward in this game. He got the goal and almost had another chance very close to the goal where he could have scored another one. So another asset that we can keep our eyes on, but it's just a Sheffield game, so you cannot
take too much out of this. Palace in general are not that attacking, right? I mean, they were taking shots all over the place. They're generally not that kind of team, right? They're kind of defense first team and going to counters and so on. But yeah, I mean, again, something to keep our eyes on when their fixtures are better, for sure.
Even another player that I would say to target from Palace if their fixture run is good and they're looking defensively solid, Anderson. I had one chance saved off the line. Was like a keeping masterclass. Literally off the line, saved it. Was any other keeper might have just missed it. It was just one of those situations where the goalkeeper was in proper position and had his hand out in the right direction, hit his hand and stopped. Even he took another long range shot, had almost the highest BPS going into the game till Palace scored. So another asset that could be looked at if defensively Crystal Palace looks stronger.
Yeah, their wing backs are not that attacking, right? So whenever Palace keeps a clean sheet, he's in for the bonuses. As you said, he was highest for the BPS this game. Even with respect to Gehi, I think he's the better FPL asset. He's always racking up those bonus points. And another, of course, the goalkeeper, John Stone, right? A lot of us had him. He is one of the most popular goalkeepers in the game. Looked good in general, but again, it's Sheffield. He didn't have to do a whole lot, to be honest.
True.
But yeah, I mean, Palace's defensive numbers were good all through last season. We expect them to put up similar numbers. So again, yes, their defensive assets could be something to look forward to as well.
Absolutely. Let's swiftly move on to the next game, Aston Villa and Newcastle. Another Emery had a very, very bad problem. Like he missed out on Mings earlier and that created a big gap in that defense. Now that Mings was almost like a leader of the defensive side and there was no one manning that line, especially when you're playing that high line against a breakout pace of players like Isak and Barnes and Wilson, you know, you're always going to be susceptible to counters. And Tonali with a good debut goal, almost got a second as well. So promising signs for Newcastle, at least. Defensively, Villa have never been very, very watertight, to be honest. But they had some results that went their way last season, mostly down to Mings saving them off the line many a times. As well as Martinez pulling out wonder saves. So not much can be called out of this performance from them because there have always been this kind of defense. Personally, from an attacking point of view, Watkins and Diaby had a very good game. Could have linked even further, gotten a few more goals. And if you have Watkins in your team, are you looking to move him over to another striker this game week? I personally wouldn't. Like on another day, another assist and almost another goal. That if he had his proper shooting boots on, he could have gotten us another goal and another assist. So
absolutely. I mean, you just have to be patient with him. And again, he is the talisman of the team. And he looked very involved as well. As you said, he could have gotten more. One bad missed chance, but that was about it. Other than that, he in general, he looked pretty good as well, very fit too. So yeah, I mean, just be patient. Unless you don't have any route to get to like your preferred forward in game week three or something, definite hold, 100% hold for game week two, SS for game week three. In general, I wouldn't be worried about Villa. I think they will again have a decent season. Anyone, any team in the league can have a bad game against Newcastle. They are that good. And as you said, with Tonali in, with Bruno G there in there, with Joel Linton on their midfield, I was telling that in the group chat, it was a group chat today as well, right? They are probably the best midfield in the league. They are that good. So yeah, I wouldn't take too much out of this game. They looked a little off pace. I don't know if that's preseason preparation or whatever. But again, Newcastle are like fitness monsters, right? They were always getting first to all those loose balls. A lot of the goals were in kind of in transition, right? In counters. Absolutely. Or in transition. There was one of those goals where like Bruno G made space out of nowhere. Like he was looking the other way and he just made space out of nowhere with that one turn, right? So it's just the quality of the players, the Newcastle midfield, and the forwards too, right? Almiron looked sharp. Gordon looked surprisingly very, very good, right?
Very good.
I mean, of course, I don't know if we can consider him as quite an FPL asset yet, but he looked really, really sharp. Like he has upped his game, right? I think he has that kind of back pushing from the coach that, hey, you go and show me what you can do. Absolutely. And he did. So he had a fantastic game. Isak started the game, but the problem with, again, the Newcastle forwards is who starts, right? Their fixtures are very good, starting game week 4-ish, I think. So we'd want one of them, but it's just hard to tell who do you want. So it's still something to look out for. I mean, in general, I would think in the long term, Isak is the central point, right? As a manager, as a club, you want to build a team around him, not Wilson, right? Who is already 30. But again, Wilson is very, very good too. Every time he comes on, he scores a goal, right? Like that's just the norm this time. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I think Newcastle just looks fantastic. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
As a team.
I mean, I was looking at numbers for Barnes and Wilson after they came out, around 20-25 minutes on the field. Barnes got one goal, one assist out of 1.43 XG, XGI, sorry. And Wilson was like 25 minutes on the pitch, got four big chances, scored a goal out of it. So he is that kind of player. Like he is on the pitch, he's going to score. But then you cannot pick one of them because, as you said, unless one is injured, you do not know for certain who's going to be playing. And it's horses for courses, clearly from Eddie Howe. But you cannot predict exactly how it is going to happen. In terms of Gordon, I think he got a very big push even in the preseason. He had a very good preseason. And also in regards to Barnes being signed on, he could think that as a direct threat for his position. So that would be another motivation for him. Looked really good. Looked really, really good. Looked like some shades of his Everton form when and he was the golden boy for Everton. So one to watch out for, but not an FPL asset yet.
Correct.
Let's move on to Everton versus Fulham. Another major XG game where the higher XG lost. Everton 2.73 XG, Fulham just 1.5. Fulham won the game. It was all down to Neil Maupay missing a lot of chances. Patterson missing an open goal and Leno masterclass completely. 9 saves in the game, ended up with maximum bonus around a 12-pointer for the game. And one of those goalkeepers that nobody had an eye on, like before the fixtures were announced, a lot of people were actually thinking about going for Leno. But then once the fixtures were announced and how Fulham looked in the preseason and with all the uncertainties with Mitrovic, with Willian, nobody was considering him as an asset, but he pulled one out of the bag and got a major haul over here. Comparatively, on the other side, Pickford, I mean, I would not blame him for that goal, but then they always look so good and yet so far away. I mean, it was completely not like a Sean Dash team. If you see the average positioning on the left hand side, it's a very attacking team, with Iwobi being the highest forward player. As well as, if you see from a defensive point of view, they are also holding a very, very high line. And that forced Fulham to go into a low block and just break onto counters and score from set pieces. So what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I didn't catch the game live. I saw highlights later. But as you said, you don't expect this from a Sean Dyche team in general, right? They were very attacking. Even like Doucouré got to the end of like 2-3 pretty good chances. They were pushing up. And again, of course, it's Fulham, so you have to take the opponent in account as well. We don't expect this from Everton every game. But at least they showed the intent, which is the positive side. But they do miss a finisher, definitely, right? Again, Maupay, when he was at Brighton, he kept missing all these chances. Doesn't seem like anything changed, right? So, yeah, I think if they had a better finisher, I would expect them to do better. Just because this season there are teams that are worse, I think Everton would be just about okay, not in relegation threat. But, yeah I think they'll be all right. And Sean Dyche is a good coach, right? He knows how kind of get these points, especially against the lower teams. I'm pretty sure he'll be disappointed with losing points in this game. But yeah, Fulham are kind of out of sight almost, right? As you said, because of all the things happening with Mitrovic and so on. We were barely even talking about Fulham assets, right, in the preseason. Leno, someone to keep our eyes on, of course, at 4.5. But Fulham defense is bad. And I mean, how much you can depend on the goalkeeper to keep making all these brilliant saves, right? He's good, no doubt. But they just concede too many chances to be relying on him all the time.
Even last season, he was the highest XGC saver from all teams in the Premier League. So that is always going to happen. Like you cannot go for a defense and expect him to like save all of these chances. One of them is bound to go in. So, but you know, if you have that courage to go with him, he can come out with these big pointers. But then again, it's not a very reliable defense, so not the most ideal situation to be in. The interesting thing for me from this game was Mitrovic coming on in the second half and getting a few minutes in, and Raul Jimenez starting the game, got one off the bar, was very close to scoring that. But then Mitrovic again makes it very interesting. If he's at the club, Fulham attack can again get can be one of those that we can attack again. Even Pereira came off the bench and looked very interesting. If you see, he was like the second highest player on the pitch from the midfield. So it looks like positives from going into the season for Fulham. One to watch out for, but not as of now.
Yep.
Let's move on to the Brighton game. Brighton and Luton ended up with a 4-1. Brighton, for a change, exactly on their XG, 4.01, and Luton at 1.48. I mean, it is fairly natural in our RDG system to give away a lot of XG. But Luton, to be honest, looked very attractive. Had good chances, like especially from Morris. Looked very lively. But on the other hand, Brighton was just too superior for them. Especially likes of Estupiñán. He was almost everywhere. If you see on the right hand, on the left hand side touch map, he was the one which was bombing forward and right behind Mitoma. Did not look like a fullback at all. Was mostly playing as a winger in that system. And what RDC did this game was kept literally no width. Was everything was running through the middle. Everything was attacked into the box,
very narrow.
I mean, very compact play. Everything was channeled towards running through João Pedro and Welbeck. So looks like a very attacking team going into the season. Good fixtures. If you don't have their attacking assets, so one to consider for again.
Yeah, I mean, the Brighton will just keep doing this, right? Racking up the XG numbers, 3, 4 XG every game. They just kept doing that throughout the second half of the last season. They have just restarted from there. And, I mean, if you don't have at least one Brighton attacker, you are in trouble, at least in the long haul. And again, I misjudged Pedro's X minutes a little bit because I thought that he would be under threat from Enkiso, etc. But looking at this game especially and looking how much he was involved, and for sure he's on penalties now, right? If there was a little bit of doubt before, he looks like the guy to stay in the main 11. It's his spot to lose essentially, right? Until he does something very, very wrong, until RDG says that he needs to change around things, I think he at least starts the games for sure. Maybe he would come off at around 80, 85 minutes or 70th minutes. But I think he is the starter for sure. And at 5.5 million, if you're getting a Luton, Brighton attacker, it's absolutely a steal, right? Mitoma looked good in general, but I think he was a little kind of a little away from the goal, at least from an APL asset standpoint, you want him to be closer. March was, right? So again, March was one of those guys who we didn't necessarily talk a whole lot in the preseason because of his injuries, end of the last season and so on. But March, again, looked really, really on it. Even aside from the goal, he was very, 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 very involved, right? So absolutely, all three of them are great assets. And Estupinian is like probably, after Haaland and Chilwell, we spoke about them before, Estupinian is probably the third most essential, at least for these run of fixtures when they have the easier fixtures. Absolutely. He is basically an attacker, right? So he was playing like an attacker, should and could have scored goals also, apart from that assist as well. He had so many outlays, right? Like for going by the line and going inside and so on. So yeah, I do expect Estupinian to do really, really well this season as well. What do you think about the goalkeeper situation at Brighton? Do you think it still holds the position, number one?
I mean, from what we heard from RDZ, he kind of confirmed that he's looking at Steele as his number one for now until anything changes from a very defensive point of view. If Steele goes and makes a very big defensive blunder, that is the only time I see him shifting around to Verbruggen. But till then, Steele looks like his first choice. Going into the season as well, he played both of them to essentially tried both of them out. But Steele has that attacking potential as well. He's a very good distributor of the ball, which RDC loves. So opens up a lot of outlays for the attack. They can actually use his distribution, go direct. They don't need to use the short passing and move the ball and play out from the back. So that gives him another option. Even like if you look at the basic RDC's system, they start from the back, invite pressure onto them, and as soon as the spaces open up, they go for the direct ball towards the wings and cut in and try to score those goals. So that as well goes into his favor because he's very good with his feet. So he can pick up a pass to a defender which is more easily open when compared to other goalkeepers that are at the club. Especially with Sanchez gone, I don't see Verbruggen to be a direct, immediate competition. But let's see in the future. As of now, I think it's still going to be still a position to lose.
One Luton player that I want to mention is the 4 million defender, Kabore. He looked really, really good. I was really impressed with him. And again, that's the kind of 4 million defender that you want to own. Has the exciting part of it, right? So again, there are some playable fixtures where you can play him if your other defenders are not fit or whatever. He has some playable fixtures going from game week 3, 4, 5 in that range. He looked really, I was really, really impressed with him.
Yeah, he's a Manchester City academy player, product. Right? Yep. Who's on loan. On the left, on the right hand side, you can see he's the highest from the left side of the defense, and he was literally bombing up and down, almost like a winger.
He was playing like a winger.
Lesser of a wing back, more of a winger kind of role that was given to him. So looks good. That's what I was mentioning. Like Luton, do not count them out. They're playing attractive football. They can cause an upset. As of now, defensively, not the best.
I think they just looked a little too open, almost like the Bielsa leads kind of, right? Yeah. Like, you just go for all-out attack. You don't think about defense at all. So I'm pretty sure they will learn, and they will have to learn if they want to stay. Maria, in general, I was impressed with Luton in general.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next game. That's the Bournemouth and West Ham game. Jared Bowen scored the equalizer for them. Solanke with the goal. From what I saw, Bournemouth look very attacking. Even if you see the average position, does not look anything like what we saw Bournemouth from last season. Front foot football, want to attack, want to play, win the games. Areola is an amazing manager when it comes to attack. He's got no defense when you're, but what happens if you're attacking so much, you leave in spaces behind. So a lot of teams can use that against them. But mm-hmm. if you're scoring the goals and outscoring opponents, then you're getting the results. So Solanke finally has that free role. He's not bogged down by players around him. He can now be the talisman of the team and be the most attacking, most forward player. Even if you see on the left-hand side, number 9, Solanke was way, way higher than what we have seen on any of these average position charts. So one asset to look out for from Bournemouth. From the West Ham point of view, they recently signed Ward-Prowse as well. So that will help them to move the ball from the midfield. As well as Jared Bowen, there's a possibility of him starting as a forward. So yep. What do you think about West Ham and Bournemouth assets?
Yeah, I think Bournemouth will be a little different from what we expect them to be. Again, new manager. They, in general, looked good in shape, well-drilled at least, right? And I think we're going to see a little different Bournemouth this year. In general, more structured, more kind of... at least they would know what to do. Like last year, again, they were very, very open, right? They were like conceding chances all over the place. But I think we'll see a little different Bournemouth this year. Again, from a fantasy standpoint, outside Solanke, probably not a lot of places that you can go to. West Ham are interesting, especially for Bowen if he does move on to that central spot. He doesn't have penalties anymore, so that's mm-hmm. that's a little bit of a bummer. But again, we all know what Bowen can do. He had a 200-point-plus season just a season back, right? So he has that capability. And again, he is the talisman for West Ham. Probably not something that you want to move on to. The Bournemouth fixture was probably the targetable fixtures, especially from their early fixture run. Wait and watch for the time being. But yeah, could be a decent asset for when their fixtures turn better, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean... looks like the 200 point season as well. Looks like he was playing almost as a striker in that season as well. So mm-hmm. that could go in his favor, and hopefully he can produce a similar kind of season again at 7.2 yeah. out of position for midfielder. Another mm-hmm. one to look at, but for the future, as you said. Let's move on to the next game, Arsenal and Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest sat very deep and were almost in a low block, forcing Arsenal to get their place from the wings, which was not very comfortable for them. It was very similar to what Wolves did today against Manchester United. Even from the XG data, you could see like 0.83 XG created from Arsenal and 1.18 from Nottingham Forest, ended up with a 2-1 result. But that also came from a master finish from Saka. On another day, on another player might not have finished that in the back of the net. So kind of lucky, I would say. Did not look like the Arsenal of last season, where they were consistently producing that 3xG kind of level. So a little worrying from their assets point of view, especially when you are at home versus Nottingham Forest, you expect a little more from them, similar to what we spoke about from Manchester United. So wait and watch and hold for now for sure, but one to monitor for the coming game weeks, because their assets are not cheap, especially with what happened in the entire defensive change, where Gabriel, we got some kind of leak where he's not going to start. People who could not move on to Saliba because of FPL servers crashing were stuck with them, and then they conceded a goal as well. So defensively also not looking very tight, and if they're not creating that XG, it's going to be a little difficult for them, even though it's just the first game. But I think it was more of a Nottingham Forest masterclass than Arsenal not being able to perform, but still want to wait and monitor for the future as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, their fixtures are still pretty good until game week 7-8 time frame, one of the best run of fixtures. I think there are a couple of problems, as you said, one of them being kind of trying to restructure in general with new players, with Partey playing right back, moving into the inverting into the midfield. We have not seen that even in the preseason games, right? I mean, of course, they have tried it behind the doors in the training and so on, but a competitive game is different, right? So they look like they are kind of trying to find a new system that can work out, right? So it's not easy, and it definitely not easy in the Premier League, even if your opposition is Nottingham Forest, right? We saw that Timber got injured also, so that also hurts at least what they wanted to do with that structure. Tomiyasu came in. But yeah, I think they're still kind of figuring out. And if the Gabriel news is true, if he is potentially going to Saudi, that also hurts their long-term plan to some extent, I think.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the second thing was Jesus missing out, right? He might be back by game week 3. But then he is so integral to the way that they play in general. And he's not like the regular number 9, right? He drops back, he engages in build-up play and so on. And Ketia is just not that, right? So I think they were just kind of missing out that a little bit as well. Jesus, when he plays, he also makes Martinelli and Saka better players, right? Because he draws players towards him. So I think when Nketia plays, even though he scored the goal, which is okay, but I think overall, planning-wise, strategically, I think Arsenal misses that, or they miss that in this game. Jesus missing out. So once he's back, I think they'll be better. Second half was really, really poor, right? They were absolutely bad. Like, no one was really playing good. Odegaard had like a last moment chance, but other than that, he wasn't that involved. Martinelli, other than that one assist, wasn't that involved. Saka was probably more involved, but again, with that other than that long range goal, he didn't have any other chances in general, right? So I wouldn't worry. Again, it's just the first game of the season, things happen. But yeah, I mean, something to look forward to, how Arsenal restructures with their new players. Rice is still getting integrated into the team, right? It's a whole different system. Being the best player for West Ham is one thing, but getting into a already good Arsenal team and integrating yourself is a complete different thing, right? So he will have to learn that as well, how to play with this team. I think another disappointment was Havertz. And again, I mean, of course, a lot of Arsenal fans were also surprised that Arteta went for him, especially for the Xhaka role, right? But he's just not defensively made up to do all that, what Xhaka could do. So again, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a new system that Arteta is trying to figure out. We'll see how that goes. But I wouldn't completely lose hope with Arsenal assets, especially given their fixtures. Absolute holds.
For sure, for sure. Let's move on to the last game of the game week. It was the Burnley-Manchester City. As we pointed out a bit in the start, two goals from Haaland. Burnley looked good at the beginning, but then did not finish the game very well. They had their chances for the first 15 minutes, and then post that were very back foot and could not create a lot. KDB injury was the one that was a major loss for Manchester City, even especially after they are at loss of players currently. So that would be like a big loss going into the season. Foden looked good. I would say he did not affect the game effectively as much, except those two key passes that led to Haaland scoring those goals. But needs to be a little more astute on the ball, a little more calm when he's dribbling. Because these are the things which Pep really looks into whenever he's picking his side. He likes to control the game. And Foden kept on losing the ball on several occasions. But now, since they do not have too many players, I think Foden is a hold if you have him. And other than that, Alvarez was really good. Created 6 big chances in this game. You do not associate him to be a creator. But that Haaland and Alvarez partnership is looking good. Like, they're setting up very well. Haaland, for sure, looks like the selfish kind out of them. But Alvarez is open to taking up that role and being a more central figure. Especially in this game, City tried something different, I feel. They were not very, very wide. If you see, even on the on the average positioning, they played their 4-3-3 kind of system, but were not too wide, did not keep too much width, but looked like a very Burnley setup. Like, since they were playing Burnley, they went with that kind of system. But it's completely unlike Pep. It was a completely different system. Rico Lewis had few good moments in the game, but other than that, was okay. I wouldn't say was at his own best. Walker had a very good game, good recovery pace. He cut out a few important passes, important attacks. Rodri had a very, very good game. One goal, one assist. Not something that you associate with him. What is your overall reading of Manchester City for this game?
Yeah, I think, as you said, the KDB injury early. Of course, we are going to expect a lot more minutes from Alvarez and Foden. So that, none of us like injuries, but I think the KDB injury makes them better FPL assets in general from an minutes standpoint. Grealish didn't start the game, which was surprising. And as you said, in general, the structure was a little surprising as well. Grealish is the one that gives them the width, right? Holds the ball, goes wide, retains the ball. So, of course, Pep tried to do something a little different in this game. Expect Grealish to come back for most of the fixtures in general. And I expect them to buy players before the transfer season ends as well. I'm not sure 100% who they were bidding for Paqueta, right? They still need more players in that area, especially even more so with KDB out now. But yeah, I think in general, again, City are City. They will figure something out. Pep will figure something out for the team. But again, this is another big team going through a little bit of restructure, right? They lost Gundogan and Mahrez, who are essentially 25 to 30 goals every season. So they have to find those goals, right? Haaland will score another 30, 40 goals this season, but they need to find the other goals from somewhere, right? Potentially Foden, potentially Alvarez, right? So that's a new thing for City, essentially, to find out where those goals are going to come from. So that's something that Pep has to figure out. I'm pretty sure he will. Defense is a little bit of minefield right now from an FPL perspective, right? Stones, Akanji, Diaz, Wenfeed, Gavardiol, AK, Luis, Walker, right? So there are just too many options right now to figure out who would play what game. You probably don't even want to touch that. Gavardiol, when he came on, looked really, really advanced and very good. I mean, we all know he's very good, but he was the guy that was bombing for through the center, through the middle with the ball. He's a very good ball carrier as well. So at 5 million, he's probably the best defensive asset. But do you want to go there, given that there are other better attacking defenders in the game with like the likes of Chilwell, S2, Jerry's, and so on, right? So it's just tough to go there right now. We'll know as we, maybe by the time we play our first wild card, we'll know who are the first choice defenders for Pep. Until then, I would just most likely avoid the defensive assets. But I think Foden and Alvarez are both going to be very, very popular in the coming days, just because their X minutes have increased after the KDB injury.
Absolutely. I mean, and both at that price point, especially, you know, Manchester City attack, the ceiling is very, very high compared to anyone in that price bracket. Alvarez at 6.5 as a forward and Foden 7.5 as a midfielder. Both have now a higher ceiling than what they had before going into this game, especially with the increased X minutes, as well as their new roles. When it comes to this Manchester City attack, they need to contribute because Pep will want to keep that goals coming for them. And there is no other way to get it. Rodri, for some reason, looked very advanced in some positions. Took away, like, Rodri's shot, as he always does. And, you know, sometimes it goes in the goal, sometimes the keeper saves it. But I don't know, like, is it going to be something that Pep is now evolving to? Is he pushing Rodri forward? Something to monitor.
Yeah, something to monitor. I mean, Rodri will probably never be a APL asset for what it matters, no matter how many goals. It's just hard to predict when he will score these goals, right? He always racks up like 140, 150 points every season at the end of the season, but you just cannot predict when he's going to score those points. So, yeah, I mean, it can be, again, as I said, Gundogan is gone. So they need to find those goals from somewhere. And Rodri is probably better suited than Kovacic to score those goals, get in the central part of the field. Maybe. That will be interesting if he ever becomes a proper FPL option.
Absolutely. I mean, Pep does Pep things, so you can never say never with Pep.
Yep, absolutely.
So that was like a wrap of all the games we had. We have a few questions. From boxing media asking about our thoughts on Son. Personally, I think he was a little too wide from my liking. Did not look very sharp as well in front of the goal. He had one chance that was saved off the line from Flecken. Does not look like the 9.5 asset as of now.
Not at all. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree there. I think he's still recovering from that surgery a little bit as well. So it's just too early to go for him, especially given the price tag, given all the other midfielders that you can go for much, much cheaper. I think right now Son is definitely an avoid.
Perfect. We have one question of Twitter. Ryan asks, who will play in the advanced midfield position for Chelsea with Lavia and Caicedo coming in? Do we see a formation shift of 2 6s and 1 8s, or 2 8s and 1 6s and no number 10? Do you think you know that?
Possibly. I was, again, talking about it earlier today. There is a likelihood that one of Lavia and Caicedo, most likely Lavia plays in the 6, and then Caicedo plays with Enzo further up forward as the 2 8s. That's a possibility, especially given that Nkunku is injured. Chukwuemeka is good, but he's still very, very young. We cannot expect him to play like every game, right? So I do see Pochettino setting us up in different formations given our opponents. Liverpool was a specific opponent that he set up that formation for, right? For 5 at the back and so on, with the wingers bombing, both of the wingers bombing forward. But there could be games where he would just play forward at the back with James sitting back at the third central back and Chilwell the only guy moving forward. But yeah, I think there is a possibility that we may see Caicedo and Enzo in number 8s. That does maybe up Enzo's potential as an FPL asset a little bit. But again, not something that I would go to right away. Right now, if you want to go for a Chelsea player, it's Chilwell, Reece and Jackson, those three.
Sounds great. One more question from Raja. He says, what is your preferred strategy, rolling in game week 2 and game week 3, doing like a mini wildcard, or rolling into game week 3 and then doing like a mini wildcard in game week 4 because of the turn of fixtures? And also has a question on Nicholas Jackson or Watkins, and the third question on Jota Nunes. So if you could take the Nico Jackson and the Watkins one, I will take the Jota Nunes and the other one.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one. I mean, of course, both Chelsea and Aston Villa have good fixtures in general. if you want to use the funds elsewhere, I think Nico Jackson, just because of that 1 million price delta, is probably the better asset, especially moving from game week 2 onwards, West Ham, and then 3 kind of bottom quarter of the table, I would say, at teams in game week 3, 4, and 5. I would just slightly prefer Nico over Watkins. What was the other one? The question.
The other one was doing a mini wildcard in game week 3 or in game week 4.
I think it depends. Just don't commit to it yet. We have barely any information yet, right? It's just game week 1 over. So look for more information. If you need to make changes in game week 3, do that. But don't be forced to do it, right? Don't be forced to use your 2 free transfers. Don't premeditate. That's the best strategy, right? Take the information in and just make your decisions accordingly whenever you want to use those 2 free transfers.
I mean, especially at this early on in the season, I would look to save my transfers for the time where I have more information on how teams are setting up, especially with the international break coming after game week 4. It could also be a good strategy to save your 2 transfers and then use it in game week 5 owing to any injuries that could happen over the international break. So I would try to save all of those transfers for now, not premeditate, rather be a reactive than a proactive manager as of now, because especially with the number of games that these teams are playing, as well as the number of injuries that we're seeing in this season, it's very difficult to predict anything in terms of fitness of the players.
Good. And
there is one more question from Raja. He asks if Jota, Nunez or none. According to me, from a very Liverpool point of view, if you're looking at just the Bournemouth game, Nunez should be the one who starts. Also, Jota came up with a very slight knock. So, but that game is not made for him, to be honest. Nunez is the one who should be starting that game. And but if you look at it from a long-term point of view, I would pick none as of now. Just wait on wait till at around game week 7 till the complete fixture turn happens for Liverpool, and then jump on their assets. We'll have more information on how Salah is adjusting to the new system and how our midfield is integrating with the rest of the squad. So personally, I would just wait. It's one fixture, and Bournemouth are not the same team from last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's one last question that I think we have already answered. Is Chilwell a must-have?
Yeah, I think given the fixtures, I think he's very, very, very close to being essential PL asset.
I agree. Okay, that's it from our show for tonight. Like, share, and subscribe if you like our work over here. And come back for our next stream. That is going to be a game week review stream at around Wednesday. And we can discuss your game week 2 dilemmas in more detail with all the information that would be fed in the coming days. So cheers, thanks for joining in. Do drop us a like if you like our work, and please support us if possible. Thank you Kante. I will we will still be connected. We'll chat. Absolutely. Over our group chat.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. For having me.
Appreciate your time. Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.